This morning we explore the rich ethnic dance tradition of Hawaiian hula, thriving all over the world through the life of one of its most innovative practitioners. The new book, The Natives Are Restless, looks at the largely untold story of how hula has roared back after two centuries of overt suppression, benign neglect, and occasional spurts of enthusiasm. As hula has come back with a vengeance, there has also been a resurgence of interest in Hawaiian language, music, and visual arts. Constance Hale is the author of the new book. She is Hawaiian-born, a San Francisco-based journalist who's been writing about Hawaiian culture for more than a quarter of a century. Again, the name of the book, The Natives Are Restless, a San Francisco dance master, takes hula into the 21st century. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Constance Hale to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Well, I have to say, since it's still morning in California, aloha kahiaka.
Well, thank you. Give us a sense of what brought you to the subject of wanting to talk about taking hula into the 21st century. Why was that important to you?
So, Joe, I've been covering Hawaiian culture as a journalist for the last 25 years or so, and it's been a pretty interesting 25 years. Of course, I was born and raised in Hawaii, so the 25 years before that were interesting, too, where you had Hawaiian culture after statehood really having been diminished and certain things on the brink of extinction, like the native Hawaiian language. There was a huge resurgence in the 70s and 80s of native pride, and people started bringing back old forms of dance, traditional Hawaiian music, and the culture. It sort of caught on in the culture. We call that the Hawaiian Cultural Renaissance. I started my career writing about that. And then about 10 years later, particularly in the early 90s, when they marked the 100th anniversary of the overthrow, which many consider to be an illegal overthrow, of the last Hawaiian queen, and then the eventual annexation of Hawaii to the United States, there was a movement for sovereignty. Native Hawaiians were saying, we want the same rights that Native Americans have to self-governance and some degree of autonomy. Since then, something else has happened, and I was dying to write about this story and to find a way to write about it, and that is that Native Hawaiians who were born sort of in that time and were part of that cultural renaissance, or maybe that was part of their growing up experience, have come into their own creatively, and they are speaking the Hawaiian language. They have learned the traditional forms of art, in this case hula. They have studied with the masters, and they are asking a new question, which I found very interesting, which is, how can we make sure our language isn't like Latin, frozen in time? How can we make sure that our culture is not fossilized? And I found here in San Francisco, where I live now, my own teacher is an example of someone in this cohort or this generation of artists who are asking that question. And I thought, here it is right before me, the person through whom I can tell what I think is a fascinating story.
So how do you remain traditional and certainly have reverence for the dance and the form while moving it forward, while bringing in a new audience and allowing it to be more contemporary?
Such a good question, and the subject of a lot of debate among scholars and kumu. Kumu is the Hawaiian word for teacher or source of knowledge, for example. So in the case of this one kumu, I'll just take this example for starters. He remained traditional by going back to Hawaii, by studying with some of the most renowned dancers and teachers in Hawaii. He moved to San Francisco. He went back at a certain point to get the mantle of kumu hula. So kumu hula is a designation. It's kind of like a PhD in hula. And he went back. He got a grant, and he went back and studied with one of the premier authorities on hula. So he himself has continued his study. He studied the Hawaiian language. And that's been very important to him. But in his classes, so I take a class from him. He's very traditional in his classes. We learn ancient hulas. We learn modern hulas of the 19th century and the 20th century. And that's it. However, when he performs on stage and he does these large spectacles once a year in San Francisco, and then he has taken those to other cities, to New Orleans, to New York, to back to Honolulu. When he's on the stage is where he's doing his innovating. So that's when he takes traditional hula movements and he pairs them with very untraditional music. It might be Michael Jackson, it might be Madonna, it might be opera, it might be Tony Bennett's I Left My Heart in San Francisco. So he's very inspired by contemporary music and contemporary costuming and contemporary multimedia, you know, different things that are available to him now that weren't available to hula, kumuhula in the past. He avails himself of all of that, loves the broad palette, but he contains that to the stage. So in other words, he is maintaining a very traditional hula school with most of his 350 students. And then with the 40 professionals, he is innovating and pushing and breaking ground.
The name of the book is The Natives Are Restless. This is also the name of the show, which is celebrating its 20th anniversary. So talk a little bit about that show and how ultimately it has transformed hula.
Yeah, such a great question as well. So when Kumu Patrick first choreographed the show in 1996, it was actually the first major piece of choreography in which he pushed the bounds in this way. And in particular, he took a piece of electronic music by a British band, Faithless, called Salva Mea, and he used it as a soundtrack for a very powerful, somewhat disturbing, kind of violent, kind of beautiful dance that depicted the collision of Native Hawaiian culture and missionary culture. That was one dance within a suite of dances, and the entire suite was called The Natives Are Restless. So it took us from pre-contact. The first dances in the show were Hawaiians pre-contact, or representative of dance pre-contact, and he did some controversial things like the women were topless, they were dancing really the way women used to dance, which we never see on stage anymore. And then he took us through the missionary period and through the monarchy, and it ended very sadly in 1893 and 1898, when the Hawaiian population had been decimated by disease, the queen had been overthrown, and Hawaii had been annexed to the United States. So that was the show in 1996. 20 years later, he decided to add a second act and add a century and a half. And so the new parts of The Natives Are Restless basically tell this story that I tried to describe earlier of Native Hawaiians taking back their culture. And so he has a dance, one of the most powerful suite of dances in the second act is about Mauna Kea, which is our largest volcano in Hawaii, considered very sacred to Native Hawaiians, but the land was turned over to the United States in the overthrow, and there are now 13 giant telescopes up there, and there are plans to build an 18-story telescope over 5 acres, and Hawaiians have protested that and actually managed to block to stop the groundbreaking on the telescope, and the whole project has to go back to environmental review. So it's a case of Native Hawaiians not just having a cultural revival, but a kind of political activism that is new, because you have people now, Native Hawaiians, who are lawyers and activists and environmentalists. And so it's very similar to what's happening in North Dakota with the North Dakota Access Pipeline, where you just have a group of people who are now able to organize in a certain way. So that's an example of how he has updated the show and is talking about contemporary conflicts. But happily, the contemporary conflicts are ones in which Native Hawaiians win a little bit more. And I don't necessarily mean win in court, but it's not as sad, as tragic a story as what happened in the 19th century.
Going back to the dance itself, in the contiguous United States, how do those scholars and practitioners of hula get beyond the stereotype and what so many of us think, which is often wrong, and improve upon that baseline knowledge?
This is really tough. And I can speak as a journalist because I've been writing about Hawaiian culture for 25 years. And I can't tell you how many times I've pitched a story on Hawaiian culture. And I can kind of hear the editor twittering at the other end of the phone. Because we have, you know, I think mainland United people in the United States have this image of Hawaiian culture generally as being kind of silly and frivolous. And a lot of the images, most people, when I tell them I dance the hula, their first response is, oh, yeah, I had a hula hoop when I was a kid.
Oh,
and a hula hoop has nothing whatsoever to do with hula. It's an American toy invented in the Midwest somewhere. And then if they are a little more sophisticated than that, the images that they have tend to be from Hollywood or from maybe a hula show that they saw if they went to Hawaii.
Right.
So it's really, it's almost like night and day, the difference between the stereotype and the real ethnic dance. So, you know, happily there are scholars. There are a few. I mean, there aren't a lot of scholars of this stuff. But, for example, there's an amazing ethnomusicologist at the University of Michigan who runs a program in Asian and Pacific Islander studies. And she's producing works of scholarship that are really rearranging our heads about the hula and the history of the hula. Her name is Amy Stillman. There's another scholar down in Southern California who just wrote a book called, it's either Aloha America or America Aloha, but it was about the whole how and why hula girls in the late 19th century got sort of co-opted by Americans who wanted to make Hawaii seem like a friendly place, and hula became this instrument of that process. And actual hula is fierce. And it can be. It can be fierce. It can be graphic. It can be a lot of things that do not fit that stereotypical image. So then there are people like Kumu Patrick Makuakane who feels very committed to performing his hula on the stage and, you know, not necessarily hewing to strict tradition. Because traditionally, Kumu hula mostly just taught in schools. They didn't necessarily perform to wide audiences, but his view is that he has the ability to reach wide audiences, and it's his kind of, we say kuleana in Hawaiian, it means his responsibility or his calling to get the word out. And so there are a number of people writing books and trying to do it, but, you know, hula is also spreading quite rapidly across the United States, and I think the more hula schools they are, not all of them are super traditional, but the more hula schools there are, the more there is the attempt to see the real thing. And most people are quite surprised when they encounter the real hula. It's quite different from what they expected.
The name of the book is The Natives Are Restless. A San Francisco dance master takes hula into the 21st century. Constance Hale, a great pleasure to have you back on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure.
Mahalo, Joe.
Thank you very much. Be well. Again, the name of the book is The Natives Are Restless, A San Francisco Dance Master Takes Hula into the 21st Century. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.